Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Anna Freud, she was the daughter of, or the niece of Sigmund Freud. Sex is something you do. Sexuality is something you are. And I think her statement has, for many, has not yet been integrated into our sexual education to help us move beyond compartmentalizing our sexual selves. Here to help us sort through all of this is my friend and colleague, Lou Padgett. Welcome to the program once again, Lou. Hello.
Hello, my dear. How are you?
Good, good. I'm not hearing you. Are you close to your, not hearing you really strongly?
Is it better now?
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you. Lou was on this program last month, and she's been a guest many times, going back to my radio times in Hawaii. And so Lou and I are buds, and we talk easily about sexuality. And I thought today we'd focus on the clitoris and perhaps its role in female sexual arousal disorder. The acronym for that is FSAD. We're going to also talk about female orgasm. And Lou, one of your, how many books do you have now, seven?
Five.
Five. Yes. One of your books is on female orgasm.
Correct. Female and male.
Mm-hmm. And female and male, right. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to look at that and also, more on arousal problems, spectating, and body image problems and other distractions that are pretty common. And Lou, as we go along, I know you'll share a lot of, especially about the orgasm and the research that you did for that book of yours. What, which number was that?
That was my third book. That's called Orgasms, or the Big O, How to Have Them, Give Them, and Keep Them Coming.
Right. Right, and I bet that still sells pretty well.
Mm-hmm. I just got my statement from my publisher. Yes.
Yeah, your books are wonderful. They're really illuminating and easy to read and fun.
Well, and thank you, Diane. And the thing that your listeners need to know is that these books are about what people have said worked for them. So it's almost like you can be a fly on the wall hearing what other people know work for them. And then that way, if you're in a committed relationship, you don't have to go do things with a bunch of people, but you can hear what also works. So I call it like a buffet of ideas.
Yes, a buffet of ideas. And you've always had fun doing your research for your books.
Mm-hmm.
Your books are all listed on your website, Lou, L-O-U, Padgett, P-A-G-E-T.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so
and
let's
we're gonna-
begin... Let's begin this discussion mm-hmm. with the clitoris. And some people pronounce it clitoris, but most people pronounce it clitoris. Isn't that how you pronounce it, too?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think it's also, you know, culturally, you know, wherever you are raised. And thankfully, now we're actually even talking about it, thank goodness.
I know. Some wag said clitoris is Latin for, oh, that darn thing was here just a second ago.
You know, one of the reasons, just as a little FYI, one of the reasons sometimes for men when they are, or a partner is performing oral sex on a woman, a clitoris is, you know, it is a vasocongestive tissue, meaning it engorges with blood and swells. So what will happen is that when they first start, they can see the hood of the clitoris is there, and they can see the clitoral, you know, the tip just pointing out. Well, once they get going and she becomes aroused, it does exactly what a penis does. It engorges and lifts up and goes back underneath the hood. So sometimes guys are going like this, or women are going like this. Where the heck did it go?
Right, right. And that happens with arousal. So that's the gland of the clitoris.
Correct.
Which is similar to the gland of the penis. And, in fact, there are lots of erectile tissues. The clitoris that are similar, the clitoris is sometimes regarded as the Emerald City. And, no, I'm not talking about Seattle because it's sometimes dubbed the Emerald City. but the Emerald City of Women's Orgasmic Response. And I often suggest when I'm seeing couples who want some tips on being better lovers for each other that the clitoris is not to be approached in haste. Sometimes it wants to be caressed with vigor, and other times some women who are very aroused or very sensitive that they can hardly tolerate being breathed upon. So there's lots of variation.
That is an understatement. And also, for some women, mm-hmm. they're being told that, you know, they have an issue with their orgasm or their sexuality, and in all actuality, what is happening is that they aren't getting the stimulation that their nerves need. So I also let people know, look, you're a beginner in some areas of your life, and this may be one of them.
Yes.
Don't worry. You know, you're not alone. And it's like learning to speak another language. You know, even if you have a vibrator that you have a Bluetooth remote to use with your partner, if you don't know which of those 12 patterns that partner likes, you're not going to do a good job.
Exactly. And sometimes a little show and tell, if the couple can be brave enough to do this, for the woman to show her lover how she likes to stimulate herself. And that can be both arousing and educational.
No question about it. And what it also does is, because many times for people, their private orgasms with masturbating, mm-hmm. those are even more difficult to have a discussion about than discussing having intercourse or doing something else, because many times they have their own fantasy about it or their own arousal strategy. And when we're talking about, you know, female sexual arousal disorder, which came about with the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual,
yes.
There was a whole range of different disorders relative to sexuality. And what I think people have to understand is that many therapists and many physicians really struggle with trying to talk about sexuality, and, you know, they come from a disease or something's not working model, whereas you and I come from, okay, let's see what is working and let's go forward with that. So
yes.
Many times people will be told that they have an issue, and the person who's giving them the information may not be as comfortable about the discussion as they should be. And that's where, you know, we try and broaden the scope for people. It's like, look, if it's not working here, then let's see how we can. You can't run a car on bad gasoline. So it
right.
may be they're getting bad information, bad fuel, or they're getting something that doesn't fit for them. For some people, you can't suggest looking at adult material because they don't want that in their bedroom. They don't want that in their minds. So we have to be sensitive, we have to be aware, and also we have to know that it can be a one-sided issue, it can be a two-sided issue. And I struggle on occasion with having to call things disorders. Because I don't think the majority of people want to think they have a disorder.
I know. It seems that it in some ways is pathologizing sexuality rather mm-hmm. than being sex positive and saying, okay, we need some more experience. We maybe need some more education here in order to have a more pleasant and pleasurable sex life. Let's go back for a moment, and you're right, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of mental disorders, and so called female sexual arousal disorder, FSAD, as I said at the opening of the show. Mm-hmm. And for some of these women, she may be in the mood for sex, but her body doesn't respond to the preliminaries, and the DSM, the diagnosis, is a condition that causes marked distress or interpersonal difficulty. If it
right.
doesn't bother her and it doesn't bother her partner, usually it's not considered a problem. But most women, if you talk to them, you'll find out it does bother them. Don't you find that that's true with the people you work with?
Yes, and I'm glad that they finally put in that it has to be something that is, it causes her distress or causes him distress, if we're
right.
Talking about, the things for men as well, and significant distress, I believe, is the way they describe it. But what also has happened is that the media, whenever there's anything that relates to sexuality, they are, bless them, they're doing the best that they can, but they have someone in the back room sending a news feed to every single person, particularly if you watch Fox News.
And yeah.
They will use, and this is what ended up happening with Ed Lauman's study, major, major study. And when when they were trying to do and say that Viagra, the PDEs, could be used for women in order to validate that they were going to be doing this testing, they took one question out of this massive, massive study, and if a woman answered yes to one of the seven parts of the question, over a span of 6 months or a month or something, she was then deemed to have, female sexual, arousal disorder, female sexual disorder, and, not interested in sex. And there were questions such as, is there any time that, you haven't really felt like it? Is there a time when you didn't have an orgasm? Is there a time, I was trying to find the study just before the show here, and I know it's here somewhere, but I have two copies of it, and I couldn't find it.
That's right. Yes.
And
they,
so what
and
the,
they, so the media will take little bits and pieces and not look at the whole.
Correct. And then what they also do, depending on who wants to do crack the whip on the statistics, they looked at it and said 47% of women in America have sexual dysfunction. Well,
yes,
no, they
did.
Don't. No, they don't.
Right. I know. That's what they said, though.
Mm-hmm. And that's what gets repeated. And that's, and as you and I both know, the moment that something is out there that you have spoken, it's, there's many times people look at a printed word and they think, oh, my God, it's gospel truth. Well, here's where I tell people, if you're dealing with something, let's look at the emotional side of things. Let's look at the physiological side of things. And then sometimes, Diana, and I think this is one of the more powerful areas, let's look at what might be running your subconscious that you don't even know about. And those are things that when people know that they have the ability to address things on their terms, it makes them feel like, okay, A, I'm not alone, and B, there is information out there, and there are people who can guide me in a way that works for me.
Yes, I do get, when I get new clients, they often say, I'm in a place in my life, either they're married 18 years, as a couple that I saw yesterday, it was the first time I saw them, and they're just so frustrated it hasn't been working well for them, their sex life, or they're very young and they want to be a good lover for somebody else and they want more information. And so there's a whole range there, but it's all about getting good information and having their own feelings validated by their partner and by themselves. It turns out that men are often more troubled by their wife's or their partner's sexual responses or lack thereof than the women are themselves. And there was a researcher here in the Seattle area, and she was going to she needed to interview 140 women. And so what she did was to run an ad in the sports section of the Seattle Times.
Oh, wow, good thinking.
Yeah, she said, I used to run them in the food section, but I kept hearing that women tell me that they'd heard about the study from their husband, who was reading the sports section.
Mm-hmm.
And, the men really appreciate so much a lover who is responsive, enthusiastic, and when she's not responsive because she's not being aroused the way that she needs to be aroused, or there are lots of problems. She's not truly present. She isn't doing the mindfulness. when she's really present, the amygdala, the fear center of her brain, switches off. So then she's able to reach orgasm. Otherwise, she won't. She can't surrender to the moment.
Well, and also, we've talked about women's brains go about 8 different places at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And bless us, that keeps us, you know, able to do a number. But it is that thing of being able to shut down the world so that you're not thinking about, is someone going to come in the room? Is someone over here? Is that phone going to go off?
Yeah.
All of which keep you and take you out of your moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the male brain, you know, bless them, they have much greater ease with going and sort of like laser focus. But going back to the woman who put the request into the sports section.
Yes.
If you want to, the things that men will read, particularly in Britain, they will read the sports section and they will read the agony aunt columns. And that's the woman who gives the advice to couples.
Oh,
and
yes.
When I was doing, and this was when Cosmo was still really big on college campuses,
uh-huh.
I was speaking with Kate White, who was the
editor
to all of the staffers. And I mm-hmm. asked them, you know, and she told me something that totally surprised me, that the number one purchaser of the magazine at that time on college campuses were male.
Yes, they wanted to find out what the women were thinking.
Exactly.
And reading about.
Exactly. So,
yes.
and the constellation of what I call the constellation of when people are dealing with their sexual wants and desires, and sometimes, Diana, you and I both know, they may not know what they are,
mm-hmm.
either from cultural reasons or because they have not, you know, exposure, or they haven't even had the ability to explore their own body.
Mm-hmm.
Then we add on to that that we have this pressure of, you know, how many times, the one question, and you and I have talked about this, I will never answer this question. What is the average number of times people have sex a month?
And yet that's a very common question, and I don't answer it either, but they want to know, am I normal? That's the driving force.
Correct. So the underlying question is, am I normal? But what mm-hmm. The reason I don't give a number answer
mm-hmm.
is because if I do, I know someone's going to get beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's going to
yeah.
say, you know, you're supposed to be doing this, and we have been given a diet of performance-based sexuality,
mm-hmm.
either through everything that's through the media. Come on, let's be honest here. Someone wrote a script. It isn't your life. And
mm-hmm.
yet people are constantly, you know, they compare themselves to celebrities or to what they see on the internet or what they might see with another couple over here or think that another couple is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And those things really factor into how people can relate to themselves and their own bodies. And you and I have spoken about Bernie Zilbergeld and how he would say that for some of his people who consider themselves to be great lovers, they didn't even have intercourse. But they had tremendous intimacy.
Exactly.
And when we talk about the clitoris, let's just say that for most women, it often is not being stimulated the way that they gives them the greatest amount of pleasure. That's why she can incorporate her hand or something. So the pressure on men to perform is really big. That they're supposed to give her an orgasm. And she is likely able to have her own orgasm, yet it's often not being done the way that is best for her with just intercourse.
You know, I have found that so many men, at least until they come in to do sessions with me, really believe that they make their woman have an orgasm. I had one guy say, you know, it's so hard for her to have an orgasm, I practically have to hold her up against the wall.
Oh, my goodness.
This is not about force. You cannot
right.
force an orgasm. And it's also the man is facilitating it. And And some men don't even know much about the clitoris and how important it is, and
correct,
the vestibular bulbs and all of that.
And the size of it. It's so much bigger than...
Yes, it's about 4 inches in length from beginning to end,
mm-hmm,
the bulb, the cura,
mm-hmm,
because
the
cura are made of erectile tissue. So that is called the corpus cavernosa, same as in a male.
Right.
So the entire clitoris is about 4 inches long. And I read somewhere that we think that the G-spot, in which case it would be longer than 4 inches, is the root of the clitoris.
Well,
have you ever read that?
No.
I mean, there's a lot we don't know yet, because there have been so many more studies looking at male anatomy than at female anatomy. And,
right.
And we females are starting to catch up the researchers for us.
Now, do you know what?
The outer part of the female genitalia is the vulva, and underneath those outer lips, I think Mother Nature planted a pair of bulbs inside her favorite garden, and these are special bulbs that grow and blossom each time a woman is fully aroused, and they are the vestibular bulbs. And so if a man, through oral sex or through massaging her outer lips, then those vestibular bulbs, since they're made of erectile tissue and they're attached to the glands of the clitoris and are very much a part of the clitoris, and that can affect her arousal a lot.
Right. Now, how about if we just give a little mental image for people?
Yes,
when
good.
When we say that the clitoris is 4 inches long, they may be thinking that it's 4 inches long, like the same way a penis might be 4 inches long.
No.
When it's not erect. No, this, imagine a wishbone.
Yes.
And imagine a wishbone.
Mm-hmm.
Take your index and your middle finger. And
mm-hmm.
Okay, so those are the legs. And the clitoris would be right at the very top of the V there. And it's going to look like the joint of your thumb, the first joint of your thumb coming up. So it kind of looks like a little bit like a funny little rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
But really, so turn it upside down, and you're going to have the first part of your thumb then will be what you see coming out of the clitoral hood. That's the clitoral glands. That's the thing that people see. But the legs themselves are underneath the inner labia. So you've got the vulva. Diana, you and I have talked about this. People are now really comfortable talking about vaginas, but unless you have a speculum, you are looking at the vulva. You are not looking at the vagina. The vagina's on the inside.
Right. People do say that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, it made me a little crazy, because once I was briefly on the show, but the Hefter show with his previous three girlfriends, and I went on with Barbie Benton, and it was The Girls Next Door. And
mm-hmm.
so I watched it from time to time, because I was briefly interviewed for one of those shows. And so I watched the show one time, and these three blonde young women, his girlfriends, were talking about vaginas, vagina this, vagina that, and they were really talking about vulvas, because
right.
it was just, they were going to make a chocolate mold of their vagina. No, they were looking at the vulva.
Right.
So
right.
I thought somebody should have corrected them, but no such luck.
Well, I tell people, okay, this is the geography lesson, and the first thing we're going to say is, let's look at the lay of the land.
The lay of the land, that's good.
Vulva's on the outside, and I tell gentlemen so what I use when we're talking about it, and I use this at the UCLA class that I do
now,
mm-hmm. Once a year when I speak to the therapist, the psych residents and the PhDs, and I use it's called the illustrated clitoris. And as I say, I think everyone should have one. And what it is five different views of the clitoris, and it is from a group in Australia called Bright Fire Press. And what
mm-hmm.
it shows is the actual location of the clitoris. So that, and again, because it's an illustration and it's not an actual picture, people
mm-hmm.
can't imagine it. And when we talk about, you know, there's so much more there that, again, we really haven't done studies. So people may say, well, how much blood actually goes into the clitoris? It's like, we don't know. Who would be able to, you know, truly technically measure that? We know we can measure whether or not there's transudate, whether or not someone is becoming, you know, aroused and there's lubrication or, you know, swelling of the vaginal vault. But, you know, there's things. And the reason we know so little about female sexuality, in the 40s, 50s, when they were doing the original Gross Anatomy books for medical students, and gross anatomy, as people probably know, means anything you can see with your eye. You don't need a microscope. You can just look at it. So the gross anatomy of bodies were being dissected for these medical books. Well, who were the majority of medical students who were dissecting cadavers to do this information at that time?
Males.
And they were young males. So, and who would the majority of cadavers have been if they were women? Older women.
Well, old women, yes, and they had, yes, I've read that, for instance, old women didn't seem to have much in the way of vestibular bulbs because they probably shrink down and they also need to get bigger. They need to be aroused. So old women didn't have enough young women cadavers.
Correct.
To really do this research.
Right, and so what would happen is, first off, you have the cultural thing of these are young males sort of, as I would say, rooting around on that area of grandma going, oh, my God. And first, you know, really, let's be candid.
I just got an image.
Exactly. And these are women who likely not being sexually active postmenopausally, so they had drop off of estrogen. So they have two reasons why the tissue would have atrophied rather dramatically. So they made it look like there was like nothing there. And that's the illustration that they all worked with. And finally, we had a study that was done, and it was out of Royal Melbourne Hospital, Melbourne, Australia. And I will think of her name in a moment. And she did a study on the comparison of the clitoris to the urethra. And what she did, and she was a urological surgeon. She was going to do a dissection. She was going to do a surgery on a woman, and this woman said, please don't cut in this particular place, do your incision there, because I derive a tremendous amount of pleasure during sex with my husband. And this woman was smart enough to know that scar tissue isn't going to have as much sensation. And that was when the physician went, oh, my God, that's exactly where I was going to make the incision. So she went and looked at her gross anatomy text and went, this is not right. So that's when she's doing the study with young female cadavers. And that was resulted in the Journal of Urology, where for the first time it was in one of the sexologists had known about this for a long time.
Yeah.
And many women had known that on one side might be more sensitive than the other side.
Right. Maybe some more nerve endings on one side of the clitoral shaft than on the other.
Right.
Would you remember, so this Australian, do you remember about what year that was?
I think it was 1998 or 1997.
Yes, yes.
And I will think of her name in one moment.
That's all right.
It's coming up. It'll float into my brain.
It'll float in before the end of the show.
Absolutely.
Click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Let's talk about female orgasm, as we mentioned earlier in the program. Lou's book is Big O's, and this is about male and female, but we're focusing mostly on females. In fact, we are focusing on female orgasm. And I want to cite a study here because there was a 2001 global study of 300 countries, and this was of sexual behavior of over 27,000 participants.
Okay.
And it revealed that orgasmic dysfunction is more the norm than the exception. One third of all women have never experienced an orgasm. And the second third rarely experience orgasm. So this is surprising to many people. Although the women I have in my practice who are anorgasmic are deeply unhappy about it and really want to be able to achieve orgasm. And when they learn to do it, they become more interested in having sex because the payoff is there. They're going to have an experience right. that's like no other.
Well, and here's one of the other things that I think, you know, just as a sort of a cultural thing that occurs between women and men, mm-hmm. when there is an issue going on, many times men will look outside of themselves for the reason something's not working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Women will go like this. They look inside of themselves for why something's not working. So the men are saying, oh, there must be something wrong with you. And often I have heard that, and I when I hear this in seminars, I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding. You didn't say that. Men will say, I've never been with a woman who didn't have an orgasm.
No, they're just stroking their own egos.
Yeah,
which
and
probably
I'm
probably faking. Unfortunately, too many women fake just so it
right.
can be over.
Right. The doctor in Royal Melbourne Hospital is Dr. Helen O'Connell.
Oh, yeah, I have read about her.
1998.
Right, very good. See, you came up with it. Good for you,
dude. Ta-da. So what often happens for these women is they simply are not getting, the men have not been educated well enough about women's bodies and women's pleasure. So mm-hmm. these women are being told they're supposed to be experiencing pleasure from something that's not pleasurable. And, I mean, just as an example, for the majority of women, the first time they had sex, their reaction to it was, really? This is it? And what
exactly.
happens, men, the sensation, and here's what I say to people, look, do not, you know, don't beat yourselves up here. Just be aware that we often think that if we like touch a particular way, our partner's going to like that. And that couldn't be further from the truth, particularly in the area of sexuality. We have to look at the male sexual response pattern and compare it to the female sexual response pattern. So here we have these young male students, med students, doing the dissections on grandma, and they're like, oh, my God, get me out of there. And then what they do is they download what they see, which is very restricted information. Then we have everything is looking at male sexual function. So because that is how men often know who they are for themselves. So we will often then do an overlay of how quickly, and the sensation for men when they enter a vagina is completely different than the sensation of when a man enters a woman. This is not just apples and oranges. I mean, this is comparing a watermelon to a lemon. Not even close.
Just expand on that a little bit, Lou, I'm sure that our listeners are understanding. You say that when a man penetrates a woman's vagina, it's mm-hmm. a completely different experience than what?
Than for how he may be thinking, because it feels amazing for him, mm-hmm. that it must be feeling amazing for her. And then what we also have to look at is let's go back to the first times when men may have had sex when they were younger. And they downloaded this brain pattern of the, oh, my God, this is amazing. And they keep going back for that. But for the women, it's more a sensation of being filled, of something and that is pleasurable, but it doesn't have the same intensity of the most sensitive area, which being her clitoral area and around the urethra, because the urethra is surrounded on three sides by the clitoris. And so for men, there's the stroking, the heat, the moisture, and the pressure that is stimulating the first inch and a half, which is the most sensitive area of a man's penis, particularly if he hasn't been circumcised. And so we have men thinking, this must be amazing for her because it feels amazing for me. And that's not the case. The thing that often men sort of like get the light bulb goes on is if they have a partner who knows what works for her and she's on top, because the partner on top is the one that controls what's going on. They're controlling the motion. And what I have found, Diana, is that for women, you know, 45 and older, they usually are not as comfortable with toys as women who are younger. But younger women also are well aware of, hey, you know what? If I need a toy, I'm going to use one. If I need a vibrating cock ring and put it on him so it stimulates my clitoris the way that I want, I'm going to do that. People have such limited time now that when they do get together, they want to have and enjoy pleasure. They don't want to have it be something that's stressful.
When I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, we found that women who had not masturbated as teenagers up until about the age of 25 and hadn't perhaps laid down the nerve tracts going from the genitals to the brain.
Right.
And so they need more stimulation. They almost always need a vibrator that can go 3,000 RPMs much faster than any tongue or finger or penis.
Right.
So that they need that extra stimulation from a vibrator in order to reach orgasm.
And
I suggest certain sex toys, and I know you do that with your clients as well, that might do the trick.
Right, and it has to be something that they're comfortable with. So this could be, I had a couple who were very religious, and she said, young child, prior to this, their sex life had been very robust, and now it was like sort of like, tsk. And it was because they had a child, and they were both working. So I said to her, you don't have as much time now. She said, absolutely none. I said, okay, would you be interested in trying some toys? And they were very, very religious. And she said, you know, marital aids, and you have to be, you know, use the right terms. And she was like, sure. And when I asked him, because I always do this, I ask the questions when they're apart, so that way I know I'm going to get their honest answer, because most couples often will not tell the truth in front of one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do, and then when I asked him, he was like, oh, no, that's only for other people. And I said, well, would it surprise you to know that she said she'd absolutely be up for it? And he was like, you are kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pivotal turning point in their relationship. And it was that it was between the two of them, they knew, you know, like talking about the nerve response pathway that hadn't been laid down. Well, what we also know is that the clitoral nerves run on either side of the clitoral gland. So that's why if someone is very good with their tongue or knows the Kiven method, which
is... Oh, talk about that. It's been a while since you've talked about that on this program, but let's do it again, the Kiven method.
Yes, so...
Which you described very well in one of your books.
Yes,
maybe
it's
two
in the
of your books.
Yeah, it's in the Big O, and I think two or three of them. But here's the thing. Instead, have the listeners imagine that the woman is lying on the bed, on her back, or she's lying down, and the only thing she has to do is focus on her sensation. She doesn't have to do anything else. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And the partner is, instead of being between her legs, facing directly at her genitals, is on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they're on the side is that they're going to now have people practice this tongue thing where they go up and down and up and down very rapidly outside of their mouth. That's kind of the motion they're going to be using. So what the partner does, takes one leg underneath the leg that's closest to them, and they put their middle finger. Now watch your nails. You got to be careful with the nails.
That's right. And you also want to have clean hands.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's hear it for cleanliness.
Yeah.
The hand that's going underneath her leg is going to go on to the area called the perineum, which is at the bottom of the introitus. The introitus is the entry into the vagina. This finger stays still. It is your feedback loop. So what you're going to do is you're going to keep your finger there, and then you're going to use you snuggle your face over to be above her clitoris, and you can use the other hand to pull back the pubis mons, you know, the little fatty pads that's at the top, so you can expose more of the clitoris. And your job is to go back and forth over the clitoral glands. And this is, I heard Dr. Patty Britton do a presentation of this at the World Association of Sexology when we were in Paris.
Paris 2001, that's right.
Right. Right, that was the first time I had heard this. And she said it is one of the most effective and quickest ways for women to orgasm with oral stimulation. So mm-hmm. the tongue is back and forth. And the two little points you may feel with your tongue are, it's the clitoral nerve bundles. And they're on either side of the clitoris.
Right.
So they may feel like a sort of half grain rice or, you know, a large grain of sand. But you're going to be going back and forth. And literally, this is something that Patty said she had done a presentation, and there was a young woman who had been working in adult films, and they were using her as the model for shooting something. And this young woman just burst into tears after the shooting of it because she had never had an orgasm in her life, and this is the first time it had happened. And here was someone who was very comfortable, obviously, having sex. They were someone who was, you know, a sex actor. And this was so shocking for her. And Patty said it was, you know, a real revelation that...
Yes, yeah, a breakthrough moment.
Exactly. So when we look at that, the other thing we have to look at when women are, our younger women are not able to have sensation, we have to look at what is happening with what they're putting in their bodies. Are they on oral birth control?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Have they been taking Ritalin or Adderall, their study buddies? Have they been taking those? Have they been taking, you know, medications, you know, for anxiety or for depression? All of these things dramatically impact one's sexual response and one's emotional response. So check the, you know, oral birth control. I'm trying to remember the name. Ocella is the generic name. But it's the, I'll think of it in a second. But it is one that literally wipes out women's libidos. So,
it changes their hormones so much.
Mm-hmm.
And some women don't come back from it, even when they go off. Not very many, but as I understand it, when they go off the birth control, the newer IUDs may be a better solution for women who are still menstruating.
Well, here's the other thing. For some women, an IUD really isn't an option if they've never had a pregnancy.
Well, that was true when I was between my two children. I couldn't use an IUD until I'd had one. But as I understand it now, and in fact I have some clients who are using an IUD and they've never had a baby.
So they're null powers and they're still able to use it.
Yeah, I think they've made some improvements in the IUD. So... But this is a conversation the woman has to have with her OBGYN. When I was at UCLA, I was a little bit surprised that Dr. Jennifer Berman, the urologist that I worked with, would actually prescribe Ritalin for some of her patients who had trouble focusing.
Oh, my God.
Because Ritalin, of course, these were small doses, but... That is the problem for women who want to have an orgasm. They just have trouble staying with the task at hand.
Right.
And the mindfulness. And I, you know, you can have a non-pharmaceutical intervention by teaching mindfulness. It can be very effective. Kinsey's work, I want to quote it right, so just one second, I'm going to go to it because it's one of my favorites of all of Kinsey's work. Just a second, this is worth waiting for, yes, here we go. So, female rats even have trouble focusing. So here's a sentence from... Alfred Kinsey, The Sexual Behavior of the Human Female. Cheese crumbs spread in front of a copulating pair of rats may distract the female, but not the male. So it's the female that's distracted by the cheese crumbs, and the male just keeps on thrusting because he's not so distracted. But we women, and we touched on this earlier, Lou, in our conversation, but... I don't think we talked about the bigger corpus callosum, which is the connecting tissue, is bigger in women between the right and left hemispheres of the brain. Because if she has a baby and she's having sex, she has to be able to hear the baby cry. And,
right.
Of course, lots of women don't have a baby, or their baby has long grown up and they're still distracted. They're just not staying with being really present. And and they also do the spectating, where they observe themselves during sex. And, you know, not in an erotic, mirror-on-the-ceiling sort of way, but in a judgmental, critical way. So rather than focusing on the sensations of foreplay and sex and all the feel-good things that are happening in her body, she's worried about her performance or her appearance.
Right.
So,
and, and then again, you know, and Osella was the generic name for Yaz and Yasmin.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Diana, for many women, if we look at arousal problems,
mm-hmm.
then we have to tease it out and go, is it a relationship issue?
Yes.
Is it actually a physiological issue? Or is she pre-orgasmic or orgasmic when she doesn't have the stress of, I'm going to lose my house? Because
mm-hmm.
stress hormone, cortisol, is directly in opposition to any of the androgens or testosterone. And women have less of that than men do. And the same thing happens for men when they're stressed. Their libidos sink, particularly if it's a money
mm-hmm.
thing. The body image, I am so thrilled with the Pirelli calendar that has just come out with Amy Schumer. It is
great. I heard about that.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? I haven't seen it.
Well, I've seen the pictures on it. And I love her. She gets up and she won. I don't know what it was she won. She was being given an award for. And she goes, and just to let you know, I might be, 165, but she said, I can get laid any day of the week. It's not a problem. And she is just matter of fact, in your face, this is what I like. And in the movie, Trainwreck, which is...
Mm-hmm.
based, ostensibly
on... Which I saw. Yeah, it's wonderful.
I really liked it. And what I liked about it is it was, sort of a coming of age, but it also, she was not, she was, I'm a sexual creature and this is who I am. And if people will notice, if they watch the film, he said, she's always on top or we're standing up. So she knew what was going to work for her.
Right, right.
And
I have found that women who've been sexually abused in their youth
mm-hmm.
Often feel more comfortable on top because they feel more in control psychologically, but then physiologically it can be better for their clitoris and other body parts. But
yes.
if they're being sexually molested, they're often being pinned down and they feel totally out of control. So it's important for them to feel in control as they try to expand their adult sexuality so that they're less fearful.
Right. And here's one of the other things I ask people to consider. When we're talking about someone is saying that someone has a sexual disorder or, there's something going on, is this because we're going to create better treatments, or are we going to create better ability to make a diagnosis so someone can charge for this? This is something that there's so many times with our sexuality that most times people will go to one of three places when they have a question or an issue about sexuality or relationships or how they're getting along with someone. It'll go to a physician, go to a therapist, or go to someone of faith. And invariably, and Diana, you are the rare, one of the rare therapists that has training in this area.
Mm-hmm.
A good percentage of them don't.
That's true. And I do hear from couples who've been with a marriage counselor sometimes, 2 years even. And even though they had major sexual problems, they bring it up and the therapist not feeling comfortable or about maybe about discussing it because of her lack of education would minimize it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't really get the help they needed.
Right. I mean, there's also people in our field who, you know, if people are interested and they want to look at things for themselves, there's a woman by the name of Dr. Leonore Tiefer,
mm-hmm.
and that's T-I-E-F-E-R. And she looks for how women can be more in control of what is happening with, you know, the diagnosing. Is it something that is, you know, for their benefit? She actually is at NYU. I believe she's at NYU.
Yes, she is.
And what
she's
I also...
She's been outspoken for a long time. I went to the first, it was called FSD, Female mm-hmm. Sexual Dysfunction Conference. It was put on by Dr. Irwin Goldstein, who was then at Boston University, Boston mm-hmm. School, Boston... Close enough. And the Bermans. And so there was a big meeting. This was 1999 in Boston.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she was there, and she was very outspoken. She doesn't believe in anything medical. I understand where she's coming from, but I have seen, testosterone replacement once a blood test is done, and I've seen... other interventions really work wonders on women. Plus, you know, I collaborate with Serena McKenzie, who's a naturopath in this area, and she specializes in sexual medicine. So I'm all for collaborating, and I'm all for interventions that work. And,
And there's no
question.
And
Leonore Tiefer is just, she's very organic, nothing in the medical side of things. So I don't agree with her there, but... that's just based on my experience.
Mm. Well, she has a, you know, she wants people to be informed when they are going and getting information. And,
well, that's always important, yes.
And so, and if the, it's like going to a therapist. If you go to a therapist and your little voice, you know, your spidey sense, your intuition tells you something isn't working here,
mm-hmm.
believe it. Because it probably isn't.
Yeah.
You need to have someone that you feel can give you the information, can, you know, is, you know, and have someone validate, is the reason I'm having an issue here because the sex just isn't good and I'm not that interested, or there's something else going on in my relationship, or I, and there's a whole range of things as to why things will take us out of thinking about being sexual. Then we add on body issues and body image.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, both women and men, we beat ourselves up really well in this one. And yet, this, when you are being intimate with someone, whether it is holding, hugging, whatever, it is you, your body, saying to them what words cannot. And that's a really powerful way of communicating. And if you have your orgasms because your partner is holding, you know, your favorite vibe up against you, or you're guiding them with your hand,
mm-hmm.
so be it. And, you know, that's part of your shared sexual history. And yet, for women and men, we have made it be that orgasm is the only goal, and it's not. Sometimes... it can
that's
be.
Very, very true. And so when I give Sensate Focus homework to couples, and Sensate Focus, as you know, Lou, was coined by Masters and Johnson, that they mm-hmm. felt too much emphasis was on people, the genitals, and that they're yet between, from the top of our head to the bottom of our toes, we have all these other erotic possibilities, and some people get stuck between the legs. So Sensate Focus, in the beginning, it's erotic massage taking turns, and in the beginning, it focuses most on face, hands, and feet. And intercourse is not allowed during this erotic massage. And it takes so much pressure off, especially men who are experiencing premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction. And then they discover all these other delicious possibilities, and it is not intercourse-based.
Right. It's, well, that's... that's expanding the buffet of what they can choose from.
Nicely put, yes.
And what we also, if people realize that, you know, what is working at this moment may not work, you know, some other time. And I had men who said, you know, a week ago she was climbing the wall. I said, right, well, it may have been due to a different hormonal pattern that she was in at that moment. And men look at me and they go, seriously? I said, seriously. So, you know, instead of thinking that you have to go down a list and check off the list and, you know, do this, do this, do this, and give her an orgasm, it may just be that she's enjoying this. Something may or may not happen, but it may be that's just where she is. And both, you know, women who are premenopausal, perimenopausal, and postmenopausal have hormonal fluxes and changes. It isn't always the same. Now, let's talk about if someone has arousal issues because of pain.
Now, oh, yes, and that's, we're going to have to, I need to stop about 2 minutes of the hour, so let's do talk about pain. I think it needs a whole show by itself, and usually I can persuade you to come back, but let's talk about pain at least briefly.
Okay, and just to give people an idea, DSM-4 and DSM-5, that's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. That's used by psychiatrists and therapists in order to go, I have a diagnosis, I can do a proper billing. So, we originally had dyspareunia, meaning painful intercourse. Then DSM-4, we had sexual pain disorder. Now, with DSM-5, we have genitopelvic pain penetration disorder. So, what people are becoming more aware of is that painful intercourse is something. Now, when they just did the Debbie Herbeneck was reporting on a survey that had been done. Trojan funded it, and they didn't do the analysis though, so they were hands off on that. But they came back, and she said one of the figures that so shocked her, and this was something that I heard when I was in in Minneapolis for the ASEC conference this year. She said,
yes.
It's something that has so shocked us. It was like 37% of these women were having pain with their most recent intercourse. And these are women aging from 17 up to 75, 80. And she said, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening? Is it intercourse too quickly? Are they not being aroused enough? Is the partner, is it the wrong position? And that's something that it's a much bigger thing. And then there's issues postmenopausally or when someone's on hormones, after a child, when you're stressed. So you need to be kinder and more gentle with your body.
Yes.
And
listen to your body. And
right.
And I always tell women that they should be the ones to signal when they're ready for penetration. And usually that's 15 or 20 minutes. Oh, goodness, there's the music. Thank you, Lou, so much.
Thank you, Diana.
Of course, we'll have you back. All right. More next week. Stay tuned. Bye-bye, everybody. My